Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the episode of Chamber Exchange. I'm Michelle Miller. I'm the Executive Director of the Gowdy County Chamber of Commerce.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jennifer Walker, Associate Director. Thanks for joining us today.
Today, we are pleased to welcome a very special guest to the show, Attorney General Mike DeWine. Attorney General,
thank you
so much for coming today.
That's great.
We're just to let you know, Chamber Exchange, we've been doing it for about 7 months, so we're still, you know, getting the hang of it. But we are so excited to have you on today to talk about different things, especially with your office that affects business. I know that you have a lot of initiatives that you work on throughout the year. But could you tell us a little bit about your office, some of the things that you do?
That's a good question, because I think people really don't know what the Attorney General does. We're, first of all, a big law firm, so we're the lawyers for every state university, for every two-year college, community colleges. We're the lawyers for all the departments, Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Ohio Department of Transportation. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of legal work that goes on. So we run a big law firm. Second, we run the state crime lab. All the things you see on CSI, NCIS, we can actually do those at our crime lab. Crime lab is called PCI. We have three locations. One's in London, Central Ohio. We have one in Bowling Green. We have one in Richfield. But we do all those things. Maybe it's not as, we don't do it within an hour period of time like you do on TV, or maybe it's not quite as glitzy and, you know, we're not talking back and forth with the screen to people, but all the things they do, pretty much we can do. And there's been a huge change in law enforcement since I was a county prosecuting attorney many years ago. You know, when I was a prosecutor in Greene County, my home county, if you had a rape case and the victim did not know the assailant, maybe it was dark, she could not identify him, unless we got really lucky, we were probably never going to catch that guy. Today, as always, he's left his DNA, but now we have the ability to get his DNA and then go into a national DNA database, known and unknown, and see if we can get a match. Many times we do get a match.
So that you do a lot of?
We do. We do crime scenes. We support particularly smaller police departments, smaller sheriff's departments, smaller prosecutors' offices. They will call us. Many times they'll call us to do the crime scene. They'll call us if they want help in the investigation or help in prosecution. They'll call us. Or what happens every day is they're bringing evidence to us, and they want us to analyze that evidence.
Well, and this is based off topic a little bit, but since you're talking about it, I've noticed there was a big push in that over the last five or say we want to help.
Well, you know, when I became Attorney General, there was. When you run for an office, there's always things you expect and problems that you kind of foresee, and then the problems that you do not foresee. And one I did not foresee, frankly, was shortly after I became Attorney General, I started hearing that there were old rape kits that were sitting around in police departments all over the state. Now, what a rape kit, of course, is when a woman is raped, assaulted, she's taken to a hospital, there's a nurse who is trained, obviously, first of all, to take care of her. But second, to ask her if they can retrieve evidence from her clothes, from her body, to try to find out who did it. The other did what's called a rape kit, sexual assault kit. That's what's supposed to happen is, the police then take it directly from the nurse, it goes back to the property room, and that's supposed to be taken in and to a crime lab and work done to find out, we can figure out who this guy is. For whatever reason, we found out there were old rape kits sitting around. So I didn't know how many there were. We thought there were maybe 1,000. So we put a protocol together, which basically says one rape kit should be tested. And our group that we asked to come up with this protocol said every rape kit should be tested, unless there's no crime. But every other rape kit should be tested. So I sent that out to all, there's about 1,000 police departments in the state. We sent letters to them. I said, bring the evidence to us. If you have an old rape kit, and we had no idea how many were out there, bring it to us, and we will test it. About 2 weeks ago, we passed 10,000 rape kits. And these are, every one of these is from a cold case, an old case, sometimes up to 20 years old. And the amazing thing is that in 37% of the cases, we have gotten a hit when we take that and put it in the National DNA Database. And so what that means is in 37% of the time, approximately 3,700 times, we've called a local police department and said, we know who your rapist is. Or sometimes we don't know who the rapist is, but what we say is, you have the same rapist as county and that county and that county, because most of these rapists are serial rapists. So sometimes we didn't have an identifier in that database, but we know that that same person committed five or six rapes.
Now, generally, is that individual already incarcerated by the time you've matched?
No. What we found is then you have to first start putting the case together. And we work with the local police to do that, or the sheriff's office to do that. Some of them were in prison. Some of them were dead. And some of them were out. We had one guy that was about to get out of prison in 4 days. And so we were able to stop him from getting out of prison because we had the new rape charge that we were putting on him. And some we just have to go find and arrest. Cuyahoga County, Cleveland, had the most of these. They had about half of these old rape kits, and they've already indicted over 400 people.
Wow.
Just in that one county alone.
That's amazing.
You know, we owe it to the public for public safety. We also owe it to the victim. I mean, imagine if you're a victim and they take you to the hospital and you're asked to give this evidence, and you say yes, and you're told that this will help facilitate finding this person. And then you find out 5 years later, 10 years later, no test was ever done. We owed that to the victims, for them to know that, hey, we've done everything that we can to find this assailant.
Well, and I think it's important to talk about that. So thank you, and thank you know your office for that initiative to start working with these smaller groups and maybe catch these people, especially in that situation where, like you said, a lot of times they're serial. They jump.
Oh yeah.
On the other hand, you also have resources for businesses, correct?
We do, and there's a number of different things that we can do. You know, we enforce what's called the Ohio Consumer Sales Practice Act, which basically deals with retail transactions, and a lot of different rules, a lot of different regulations. So one of the things that we do is we will come into any county and put on a seminar for local, their own lawyers, and they don't really need our help. We're happy to do it for them if they want. But it's the smaller businesses, particularly someone who's starting out in business. You know, it's helpful for them to understand what the Consumer Sales Practice Act requires of them, what the civil rights laws are, what other employment laws are. I mean, our whole idea is to let's not have a problem, you know. People get into trouble many times and have problems when they don't realize what the law is. So if the chamber wants to have a seminar, we'll come in, we'll put that seminar on, we'll tailor it however, you know, the chamber wants us to do it. We've done it for NFIB, for example, as well. But it gives us an opportunity to bring our lawyers in and inform people of, okay, you may not have thought of this, you have to do this, this, this.
That's something.
All prevention. And the last thing in the world we want is to have a situation where we get a complaint and it turns out that the business is doing something they're not legally allowed to do, and then we have to go deal with it. So, you know, my family was in a small business for 60 years, a seed company, DeWine Seed Company in Yellow Springs, started as a feed store in the 20s by my grandparents. I worked in there as a kid. And so I understand, I think, the view of small business. We probably never had more than 25 employees. And I know how onerous, frankly, government regulation can be. And that's another thing that we're trying to help business by cutting through some of that.
Well, that's definitely something we would be interested in.
So we'd love to do that.
Great.
As far as consumer complaints go, I've received many of them. What are some of the most commonly received consumer complaints, and what advice can you give businesses on how to avoid them?
Well, right, and you know, business, particularly small business, is susceptible to almost every one of the normal scams. We've always had con artists, we've always had scam artists. What we have today, though, is the very long reach of the Internet. in the very long reach of telemarketing. So you can have a couple, as we did in rural Coshocton County a few years ago, who ripped people off in 48 states. How'd they do it? Well, they went up on Craigslist. They pretended like they had PGA tickets, Lady Gaga tickets, whatever you would want, they've got them. And the only problem was they didn't have them. So they sold them. Checks would come in. When we finally got arrested, the woman, our agents, asked her, well, didn't you know this was going to happen? So, yeah, she says, but the money was just so good. It just kept coming in week after week. So, you know, we deal with that. The grandparent scam is a scam that is, there's somebody tonight in Ohio will fall for the grandparent scam. And it's a really a basic scam. Somebody calls you, and it's Mary, your granddaughter, and Mary's crying. You don't understand her. And she says, I'm in trouble, and, you know, I need money. And you fall for it. You think it's your granddaughter. And there's a reason they generally call grandparents. They don't call parents. The grandparents are much more understanding. They want to be helpful. A parent might have said, well, what's your problem?
What's
you
know,
wrong? Okay, you're in Fort Lauderdale. What are you doing down there? You're supposed to be going to school. Grandparents will kind of know what will help. So a grandparent scam is very easy. They just say, we need this money. I need this money to get out of jail. They tell you who to send it to, and you send it, and of course it's not your granddaughter at all. We just have so many different, and some can be very serious. On Craigslist, a year or so ago, in the Akron area, we had a guy go up on Craigslist and say, come to Ohio. Basically, if you're down and out, you don't have a job, I've got a place for you to live on the farm. I got a house. Bring all your possessions, and I'll hire you at X number of dollars a week. And people started coming, and he killed them. Took them out and shot them and killed them. So we just tell people, you know, not to be alarmist, but just be very, very careful. There's all kinds of scams up there. I mean, everything from the puppy scam, where they pretend like they own a puppy and they're going to sell you the puppy, to the dating, well, for them, they find somebody and get married and live happily ever after, and they've done it initially online. The way this scam works, though, is that the person goes online, they pretend to be a woman or a man, and they establish over time a relationship. So, you know, if you're the person who's going up online and you're interested in the Cleveland Browns or the Cincinnati Bengals, they're going to be interested. Whatever you're interested in, they're going to be interested in. And they just kind of lead you on. So you actually develop a relationship with this person. But when you say, look, we need to meet, I want to see you, I want to talk, it's always I'm overseas. I'm in the diplomatic corps. I'm in the military. It's always some excuse. And then the hook finally comes in after about 4, 5, 6 months, and that is, gee, I really want to see you. I don't have enough money to fly. Can you send me the money? Or I have to have a serious operation. Can you send me the money? They know them, even though they've never met, and they send money. And so, you know, we tell people, just, you know, use your common sense. If you get a scam where it says that you've won the lottery and you have to send some money so that they can pay the taxes and do the paperwork, just think, did I enter the lottery? Did I enter the sweepstakes? If you didn't enter, you're probably not going to win.
With you seeing so much of the fraud from individuals, obviously, who have criminal intentions, how do you process it when you actually have a legitimate business? You have an individual calling saying that someone from a pretty well-established business has ripped them off. How do you discern and differentiate to figure out if there's really fraud there or how does that work?
Yeah, you know, what we always try to do is we'll call the business. And candidly, it's rare that you have an established business in a community that really is engaging in fraud. You may have a misunderstanding about their take-back policy or some policy, and we try to sort that out and see if we can work it out. I mean, we understand what the law is, and when we have the facts, we can pretty much tell people, okay, look, this needs to happen. Or in many cases, it can happen. Look, you're sorry, you're out the money. I mean, you know, you bought it. It doesn't have a return policy on it. So we kind of arbitrate a lot of those. And we rely really on business and the good faith of business. We call them and say, look, this consumer is complaining about this. What's the story? And they'll check it out, and sometimes they'll say, yeah, the consumer's right. A lot of times they'll say, no, look, here's the story. So in some cases, nothing happens. In some cases, we consumer and the merchant. And in a small number of cases, small percentage, we actually then have to sue somebody who is out there, you know, violating the law.
What do you find is the most violated, I guess, areas of business that maybe the business doesn't know that they're violating it? What do you find that businesses need to be more educated on as far as?
Well, I think that, you know, the particulars of Consumer Sales Practice Act, I mean, it's not something that anyone would necessarily know these things. I mean, if they're soliciting you at your home, the basic law in Ohio is that there's a 3-day waiting period. So, you know, you go in, it goes in, and or somebody does coach and gives you an estimate on your roof. Let's say you got hail damage. You have 3 days. If they've solicited you at your house, you have 3 days to back out and say, no, you only signed a contract. No, I want out of that. So I think that's, people misunderstand that a lot. Sometimes people think it's always 3 days. I go into a store, I buy a suit, I buy whatever, a shirt. Well, no, there's no 3-day rule. So I think there's that confusion. I think just trying to clarify that for people. In the real estate market, people who are dealing in real estate, and realtors get all this training, so it's not usually realtors. But let's say you have a house that you rent. People don't know what the civil rights laws are in regard to that. And you really can't say, put a sign up that says, no children. Can't do that. Now, some people think, well, it's my house, I can do that, but that's not what the state legislature has said. And so what we have to do is we have to enforce the law as written. We don't make the laws. We enforce them as written by the state legislature. So it's things like that that people really don't necessarily understand. We want to prevent a problem, and we think education is the way to do it.
Just need to push back in their lane a little. Just a nudge.
Well,
just a nudge.
Well, there's that too. There's that too. Yeah, there's that too.
Well, prior to this interview, we sent out questionnaires to our members to ask them if they had any specific questions maybe for you.
And they did, huh?
Yeah, and they did. We had a couple of them.
Sure. And I can lead off with
that.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be great.
And I'm going to read it as it was written. Do we have to forever, or will there be a day in the future where businesses can assume the general public knows of this law? If road signs were used to inform out-of-state travelers as they come into the affected state, it would take the burden of the business off the businesses and the unsightly stickers everywhere.
I fully understand. The law in Ohio today says you have to keep the stickers up, but that can be changed by the legislature. And really what we're going through is a cultural change where people now understand they go into a business. You know, they cannot smoke. Originally, the signs were there to remind people, okay, that's the law in the state of Ohio. Today, I'm not sure they're necessary. So I would think in the next few years, the state legislature, listening to merchants and others, will say, okay, you don't have to put the sign up anymore. It's still illegal, but you don't have to put the sign up. But as of today, they still have to do it.
And I think maybe that's something, too, if you would want to talk about that, is an understanding of how it works. Right now, your office, you uphold the law.
We uphold the law.
We're
not the state legislature.
Right. So something like this would need to be taken.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it brings up something that I would just suggest, and that is that if you have a problem, you think some law needs to be changed, you know, talk to your state senator. Talk to your state representative. If you don't know who they are, go up on the Internet. You know, they'll tell you who they are. Establish a relationship. I think for business, it's important to have a relationship, as it is for all citizens, with the people that represent you in Columbus. That's what they want to do. I mean, they want to represent you, and so establish that relationship before you need them. Establish that relationship before you have a problem where you have to call up the state rep or the state senator. It's good if they know you before that. Just human nature. And I think that would be my little political advice for the day to any of our.
Well, when we're lucky, ours are very active in the area, so it's very helpful to be able to speak one-on-one. I mean,
and that's the most effective way. I mean, people say, is a petition or writing a letter? No. That's all fine and acceptable, but the most effective thing is when your representative, your senator, or your congressman is near, go see them, talk to them, tell them directly. I know that's when I was in Congress. You know, someone told me something directly. That makes a big impression.
Well, and you would have the chance at that point to ask questions.
You go, back
and
forth, dialogue. You have the exchange.
We had another question.
Okay.
Field of Hope is a member of the chamber, and they're involved in assisting with substance abuse epidemic. And so Kevin Dennis, the Field of Hope Executive Director, asked, we are all painfully aware of the substance in Ohio, and our area suffers greatly from it. Since the financial toll is so high on our law enforcement, legal, and social services communities, what is being done on the prevention and treatment side to head off and correct substance abuse behavior? How do we gauge the effectiveness of the current strategy?
We could do a whole show on this. We have a huge problem with heroin and opiate addiction. We lose 5 or 6 people in Ohio every day who die of an overdose of an opiate or heroin. The Mexican drug cartels have got a perfect business model. They grow the poppies now in Mexico. They ship them across the border, ship the heroin across the border. It comes into every county in Ohio. It's sold cheaply. It's $10, $15. It's as easy to buy as a pizza, and you can get it delivered just as quick. What do we do about it? No easy answer. We do what we do in law enforcement. My job is to assist local law enforcement, so we have what we call a heroin unit, and if they want us to come in to help them case, and usually it's to get from this level of a dealer to try to get to a higher level of dealer. We have equipment, we have people, we have lawyers who can come in and help them do that. Having said that, quite candidly, we're not going to arrest our way out of this problem. We're going to have to do a better job in this country with education and prevention. We're going to have to do a better job in regard to treatment. We need, frankly, in Ohio, to start doing something age-appropriate, K through 12. I was on Reagan's National Commission on Drug-Free Schools in the 1980s, and the one thing I took away from that was, from the experts, that teaching about drugs and having it have an impact with kids is no different than learning to read or doing math. You know, you wouldn't think of doing something in first grade and then don't do anything with education until ninth grade about reading. So what makes us think that we could do it in fifth grade and ninth all the other years in regard to drugs? So we have to start doing something all the way through.
And I remember that as a child, you know, in school as a child. It was all the time, every year.
Yeah.
I was part of it.
Right.
I don't think, my kids never talk about it.
Well,
you know, I came home and talked to my, I talked to my kids about it, but I would tell my parents what we learned that day and whatever assembly we were having. And my kids never come back.
Well, here's a big change. We have a cultural change. Heroin, when I was a county prosecuting attorney, heroin was something you'd expect to find in your big cities. You would not expect to find it in Gallia County. You would not expect to find it in Jackson County, Lawrence County, or Greene County, my home county. There was sort of a psychological barrier. But when you ask them, are you doing heroin? I was a prosecutor. Say, do you do heroin? Oh, come on, DeWine, I'm not crazy. I wouldn't do that. That's what crazy people over in Dayton, that's what people down in Cincinnati do that. Put that stuff in your veins, I never do it. That psychological barrier is now gone. It's flat. And we have to bring it back up. You know, kids are thinking nothing about heroin. It's just another drug. It's not another drug. It's just horribly addicted. And, you know, if you think it can't happen, you know, to your family, you're wrong. It can happen to anybody's family, middle class, you know, rural area, city area, suburbs, just as susceptible to it. So I think we have to do more in education, and we have to do, frankly, a better job in regard to getting people into treatment, and then when they get out of treatment, continue to help them. It's very, very, very tough.
we have, this isn't business related, but we had one member ask, recently, Nevada, Texas, and New York decided that daily fantasy sports, such as DraftKings and FanDuel, are illegal based on the idea that it may be pending on whether or not those are gambling, and will Ohio be the next state to ban these sites?
We've looked at this in the Attorney General's office. We've made the decision that this is something, if the legislature wants to change the law, they should do that. We have an awful lot of people who are playing in the state of Ohio. The law is somewhat unclear. The legislature is certainly aware of this. If they want to change the law and outlaw that in Ohio, they certainly can do that. But for now, at least, people are very free and play if they want to do that.
So as it stands right now, it's interpreted under the law.
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, the legislature may jump in and say you can't do that anymore. If they do, then it's the way it is.
Well, we have about a minute left, and I know that you had a book that you brought out. It was at the Ohio Economic Development Manual. Is this something
that... book is. We put this book together, and I say we, in my office. Yeah, it's green.
I didn't think about it yet.
Sorry about that. We have the green screen back there.
Right.
But anyway, the whole idea is this is kind of a Bible for people to just keep on their desks, particularly economic development people in small communities. It covers the law, it covers the way everything is done, and just is a reference manual.
So can
anybody that wants it, we can send it to you, or you can go up online and pull it down.
Great.
So it's there. It's OhioAttorneyGeneral.gov. And I also put a plug in there, OhioAttorneyGeneral.gov. Look up Marin, M-A-R-I-N, young 20-year-old girl who died of an overdose. Told through the eyes of her parents, the woman who, the mom worked for us.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come down and talk to us. I'm Michelle with the Chamber. Thank you very much.
And I'm Jennifer. Thank you, Attorney General.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Today.